As part of my special week of programming for Emmy Awareness and Millions Missing Weeks, my guest on today's podcast is who I think a trailblazer in the UK on the subject of myalgic encephalomyelitis ME and chronic fatigue syndrome CFS. She is a doctor, an author, a public speaker and campaigner who, in my opinion again, is one of the most insightful going with her not only treatment plans but her overall approach and worldview to this most debilitating of illnesses. She is fabulous. I'm very pleased to have her on the podcast. It is the ever excellent Dr. Sarah Myhill. Thank you so much for coming on. Am I calling you Dr. Myhill, or are we doing Sarah today?
Sarah will be perfect. When I worked in Nottinghamshire, my patients used to call me Dr. Duck.
I will remember that. That's now implanted in my brain. Wonderful. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. It's really great to have you here. Now, regular listeners to the podcast will know that ME-CFS, or ME as I prefer to call it, is a subject very close to my heart because my girlfriend Nicola lives with this condition, disease. So we've talked about this a lot already on previous podcasts. And of course, there is a week of programming this week. There's plenty of content on our website, www.thecanary.co. So I'm not going to go into the fine the details of the overview of it. However, Sarah, what I want to get straight into is the fact there is much debate around the causes of ME, CFS, what drives it, desperate searching for some sort of marker. We've had evidence out just recently about a potential blood marker for it. In your opinion, your experience is vast on this. You've treated thousands of people. You're an author who's written numerous books on the subject. In a nutshell, what do you think drives ME and CFS in people? What's the root cause, in your opinion?
Okay. Well, it's a little bit like asking what causes pain. The answer is lots. But the way to think about this has to do with mechanisms. Now, chronic fatigue syndrome, that arises when the energy delivery mechanisms to the body are impaired. ME results, that clinical picture of ME, results when the energy delivery mechanisms to the body are impaired and there is an immunological hole in that energy bucket. And that immunological hole can be due to allergies, it can be to autoimmunity, and it can be to chronic infections. So chronic fatigue syndrome is just pure energy delivery mechanisms. ME is poor energy delivery mechanisms plus inflammation. Now, if we think about it in that way, that gives us a very logical approach to treating. And because the first thing we do is we ask our patients, what are your symptoms? And there are some symptoms which are pure poor energy delivery symptoms, i.e. they feel tired, they have a foggy brain, they have no stamina, they have post-exertional malaise. Those are all poor energy delivery symptoms. And then we have inflammation symptoms, and those symptoms are characterized by feeling ill or malaise, fever, heat, redness, inflammation, pain, loss of function. Those are all inflammation symptoms. So just the history gives us a pretty good clue as to what's going on. And then we have to look at the poor energy delivery side of things. And in my view, there are four important players. And the analogy I use all the time, which I find helpful, my patients find helpful, is the car analogy. And guess what? For your car to go, there's no good just fixing one thing. The whole thing's got to be right. And the big players are, first of all, you've got to have the right fuel in the tank. And I probably spend more time talking about fuel, i.e. diet and gut function, than everything else put together. It's so important. And the problem with modern Western diets is they are based on carbohydrates, and carbohydrate is the wrong fuel for our evolutionary car. You know, our bodies evolved eating a paleo, ketogenic diet. I've written books about it. It's important. And if people don't do the PK diet, then really other interventions are to no avail. You know, there is no good putting petrol in your diesel car. It just ain't going to go. You can have a perfect car, but if you're putting the wrong fuel in it, it ain't going to go. So we spend a lot of time talking about that. We then have the mitochondrial engine. And as you probably know, I've published three papers on this, and these tests are not available to everybody. But even without the tests, I now know that the treatments for poor mitochondrial function work reliably well. And we can easily put that in, and essentially mitochondria go slow for one of three reasons. Either they don't have the raw materials to go, And again, that has to do with fuel. But there are some essential nutrients like coenzyme Q10, like carnitine, like B3, like magnesium. Without those essential raw materials, mitochondria will never work. Then mitochondria may be going slow because they're blocked by something. And believe you me, I've seen patients with Guillain-Barré syndrome, with GUF, with sheep dip flu, who are poisoned by organophosphates. You know, mitochondrial function is dependent on oxidative phosphorylation, and organophosphates inhibit that for very obvious biochemical reasons. So we're looking for poisoning. And then mitochondria may be going slow because the control mechanisms are wrong. And that brings us on to the third and fourth cause of fatigue, which is the thyroid accelerator pedal and the adrenal gearbox. Now, the thyroid is such an important player here, and hypothyroidism in this country is incredibly badly treated. Why? Because the doctors don't treat the patient, they treat the blood test. And if the blood test looks okay, oh, nothing wrong, let's look at something else. And a very important diagnosis is missed. And I could talk all podcast about this, but I'm not going to. But the details are in my book, how you can fix this yourself using simple physiological measures and simple nutritional supplements. And then the adrenal gland is effectively the gearbox of the car. That allows us to move up a gear in the event of stress. You know, we can't all go in overdrive all the time, but we need to gear up to deal with that. With demands, whatever those demands may be. And guess what? Life is full of them. So having thought about the energy delivery side of things, we have to look at then the inflammation side. And I got interested in ME in the very early days of in the 1980s, because I found that many of the patients that I treated for allergy problems, who may be presented with migraine or irritable bowel or arthritis, when I put them on their elimination diets, they suddenly turned around and said, goodness me, my energy's so much better. You know, I've suddenly got some zip in me. So I knew allergy was a big player when it came to the immunological hole in the energy bucket. But increasingly now, I'm finding that chronic infection is a big player. And there's been some fantastic work done in this sphere. So, for example, the work of Dr. Martin Lerner, an American physician, he's been studying post-viral chronic fatigue syndrome since 1993, has now published 4 papers showing the Epstein-Barr virus, or mono, or glandular fever, whatever you like to call it, is causally implicated in about 80% of the post-viral MEs. And that antiviral regimes, including antiviral drugs, can be extremely helpful and cure many patients. Increasingly, now we are seeing that Lyme disease is a big player. Again, it's gone unrecognized, and we now have Armin laboratories in Germany who do excellent, reliable tests, and I use them very often. And the other two big infectious drivers that come up time and time again, one is mycoplasma, and again, we can test for that at Army laboratories. And the other are mycotoxins. And again, this is something I've only picked up on recently, but we can test for that very easily by doing a urine test to look for mycotoxins. And essentially, mycotoxins are the nasty toxic things that fungi produce. And we've known for years that, you know, candida, so-called, is a problem in patients who have ME. And what happens is people get exposed to fungi, which might be from water-damaged buildings. It might be in this part of the world. It's from farmers handling moldy hay or moldy straw. And they get an infection in their nose or their respiratory tract or maybe their gut, or for women, in their perineum. And that chronic fungal infection produces mycotoxins, which then poison the body. So that is how I see the whole of chronic fatigue syndrome and ME. If you want to pick up on specific points, then fire away.
Your clarity always amazes me. It's wonderful, and you are probably the best person explaining this out there at the minute. I want to go into more your thinking behind it, because as I said in the introduction, your worldview and your approach aligns with me, and I know many other people personally, because of the position you're coming from. I mean, all of your books, not least especially the PK Diet, the cookbook, but obviously it's mitochondria, not hypochondria, the CFS treatment book. It's this worldview of that we need to change our approach as people, and ultimately as a species, to how we do things in terms of what we eat, our view of pharmaceutical products, our view of the pollution that now pervades our environments. What, this overarching kind of view, how did you come to this conclusion? Where was that born, if you like? Because I find it invigorating a lot of the time, to be honest. It's wonderful.
Well, from very early on in my medical career, and when I went into general practice in the early 1980s, I was not prepared for the sort of questions that patients asked me that we hadn't been trained to respond to. So, you know, a lady would come in and say, I've got terrible migraine, and I immediately rushed to my prescription pad. Oh, yes, you need this drug and that drug. No, 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 she said. I want to know why I've got the migraine. What can I do to stop it happening? And of course, you know, that's so obvious, isn't it? But doctors don't get trained like that. Why? Because medical education has been taken over by the pharmaceutical companies. What do they want to do? They want drugs prescribed. And if they can have symptom-suppressing drugs that patients need for life, that's good business. And if you give somebody a drug, you get a side effect, and then you need another drug, and that's even better business. So the whole of healthcare in this country, well, medical health care, is a business model. It's not a patient-oriented, let's get the patient well model. That's disastrous business decision. So it's very simple. I worked it out very early on in my career, and I have to say, early on, I felt completely disempowered, and you know, I didn't know what to do for my patients. I went scurrying back to my textbooks and thumbed through looking for causation, but thankfully, my patients rated my ability to care much higher than my ability to know, and they were very forgiving, and off they went, and they tried this, that, and they tried that, that, and so on. And so by pure trial and error, I muddled my way through. And of course, I'm not the only doctor thinking like that. There are other doctors, and of course, I linked up with them. We now have a very strong society called the British Society for Ecological Medicine. Ecological medicine, why? Because we're treating people from first principles, not, you know, the symptom suppression model. And that movement is growing. So it's taken an awful long time to get here. We have moved very slowly. Why? Because there is so much establishment opprobrium. You know, the conventional doctors do not like this approach. It undermines their authority, and they put as many possible blocks in the way as they can. I mean, on the news this morning, classic, you know, case, you know, a pharmaceutical company has been done for bribing doctors in America to prescribe fentanyl, a really toxic opiate, for reasons other than terminal care. I mean, I read that they're prescribing opiates in order to improve their sex life. You know, this is not responsible medicine. This is not good medicine. And it has been disastrous for patients.
I absolutely agree. And I will have to have you back on the main politics show of this podcast sometime to get into that in more detail. Because, I mean, this is why your approach is so important for me, because when you broaden it out, it encompasses the faults in our entire systems that we live under as a species. It's absolutely fascinating. But, of course, what also comes into this approach, which I'd like to get into, is the mainstream establishment thinking surrounding ME and CFS, which is, of course, as many listeners will know, is based on the nefarious PACE trial that was conducted by various doctors back in, the results were published in 2011 in The Lancet. There's background information on this on the website. But the PACE trial has marred people living with ME and CFS now for years and years and years, often to the extent where they have their children taken away. They are sectioned under the Mental Health Act. It's broken up families. And all the while, the researchers behind it seem willfully ignorant to this and are happy with the abuse that has been meted out. I mean, for me, PACE trial was conducted, and it's essentially fraud, for want of a better phrase, but it was conducted for numerous reasons. I mean, I've written a lot about how it was part funded by the Department for Work and Pensions, and how it's part of a more overarching drive by government and corporations to force as many sick and disabled people back into some kind of employment as possible. But I mean, for you, how can something so disastrous and so ethically and medically and scientifically fraud firstly still gain traction? And also, why do you think it came into existence in the first place? What was the thinking behind PACE trial?
Well, you are now looking at a very angry woman.
I'm glad. Good.
PACE trial is an example of the worst form of scientific fraud and, by implication, financial fraud, because the very people who finance that study are the people who stand to gain most from it, i.e. the pensions companies, the insurance companies, who now no longer have to pay compensation to patients because they're trying to say this is a psychological illness. And, you know, I have copies of email conversations between the PACE authors and those insurance companies setting up the whole thing in order to fit a psychological psychiatric model. Why? Because that's, you know, follow the money. It's the old story. Now, it's not me that's saying PACE trial is fundamentally fraud. It is academic authors, academic centres all over the world. You know, we now have, you know, almost 200 scientists saying this is a fraudulent study. We now have an online petition, 10,000 patients who have been damaged by PACE recommendations. You know, of my patients, over 200 have sent personal letters to the General Medical Council saying they have been damaged by PACE. So what do we do about it? Because there's no point just shouting or squealing. That doesn't change anything. So last January, I reported the authors of the PACE study to the General Medical Council for scientific fraud. Now, this is a very serious issue. The GMC responded to me to say they weren't going to investigate. Now, that's exactly what I expected them to do. And so I said to the General Medical Council, I have supplied you with an overwhelming scientific base for my complaint, and you have not supplied a shred of evidence defending your view. You've just sent me a bland letter saying we disagree. So I said to the GMC, you must supply me with your evidence base. And I repeatedly asked them, and they sent back their own decision to be reviewed, and they came back to me in February and said, we are not going to investigate the PACE authors. And that decision I'm now taking to the High Court. My application has been accepted, and I am now awaiting the High Court's response. But we will have our day in court. And there, I will like to demonstrate to the world that those PACE authors have no, a big one, the GMC have no evidence base for refusing to investigate those PACE, and those doctors should be properly investigated for scientific fraud and, by implication, financial fraud. Don't forget, that was £5 million of public money that was spent on a fraudulent trial, which has been extremely damaging to ME and chronic fatigue syndrome patients. Why? Because they've been refused benefits, because they have been refused compensation when they have been damaged by chemicals or radiation or whatever. But more importantly, many patients have actually been made worse by PACE recommendations, because guess what? Graded exercise therapy makes them worse, and for some of them, permanently worse. Fourthly, monies which should have been diverted into proper research, proper biomedical treatments for people with chronic fatigue syndrome and ME have been diverted into this ridiculous grade exercise nonsense. And fifthly, doctors like me are being persecuted for recommending biomedical treatments. Now, you may not know this, but I have been endlessly prosecuted by the General Medical Council. Why? Because I'm using biomedical treatments for ME patients. I have faced investigation because I've recommended vitamin B12 injections, because I put patients on diets, because I've recommended mercury detox or whatever. All these things are recognized treatments by ecological doctors for ME CFS sufferers. And these doctors are being inhibited from using these interventions because they are fearful of being prosecuted by the GMC. So we must pursue this PACE trial for all these reasons.
Just to divert from my script slightly, I just want to throw something else at you, actually. The UK, we often with things seem to be the eye of the storm. There's this notion in sort of in political circles, especially, that somehow the UK is some sort of lapdog to the US. And while with regards to PACE trial, it's kind of true because of Unum, one of the main insurance companies involved with PACE trial, obviously a US firm. It fascinates me that while in America, graded exercise psychotherapy and cognitive behavioral therapy as treatments for ME/CFS have been banned, and they've been struck off as being recommended treatments. In the UK, we still have this by NICE as the guidelines, although they are reviewing it. Why do you think PACE and the outcomes of it have still stuck so heavily in the UK as opposed to other countries?
Well, you look at how health is run in the UK. It is doctor driven. It's like a sweet shop. You know, the doctors say, this is what's available. If you don't like it, you can piss off. Whereas in America and other countries, medicine is patient driven. If the doctors don't supply what the patients want, then they don't go and see them. They go and look elsewhere. And of course, you know, patients in America know that ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, as in this country, is a physical illness, and they are going to go to physicians who use proper biomedical treatments. And so those patients get a much better deal in America, where, as I say, medicine is patient-driven, whereas rather in this country, it's physician-driven.
That's fascinating. No, completely agree, absolutely. And there's a fundamental sort of sad flaw with our NHS, in my opinion, that, as you say, it is doctor-driven, but also it's this factory production line, if you like, where people go in ill one end and supposed to either come out healthy or dead at the other end. And then there's a system flaw with the NHS, sadly, which sorely needs rectifying. However, that's for another podcast. Moving on, I want to, with regards to PACE trial, you have launched the most fantastic campaign, which is centers around sort of aspects of post-trial implications, which are always put on the back burner in terms of the narrative from a lot of organizations. It's a campaign called MAMES, which is calling for a public inquiry into this. Please, please, please tell my listeners about this, because we need to get as many people behind it as possible.
Well, my view is that ME patients have suffered the same sort of abuse as patients who've had, for example, had the blood transfusion scandal, for example, young people who've been sexually abused. It's a similar sort of abuse where people who are powerless because they haven't got the energy to fight are told by, you know, doctors who should know better about treatments that actually make them worse. This is medical abuse. That's why I've called it MAMES, medical abuse in ME's. And the only way we are going to correct this is through a public inquiry. Because believe you me, I have spent my life trying to educate doctors to change their ways. It has failed miserably. Why? Because asking them to treat ME in this way is asking them to rethink the whole of medicine. Ask them to look at every single condition that comes into their office, whether it's inflammatory bowel disease or migraine or arthritis, and look at it from a causation point of view. And they're just not going to do this. It means too big a shift in their whole practice. It means relearning the whole of medicine. So this has got to be a patient-driven revolution, and we need to start that with a proper public inquiry. And to get that public inquiry, we need enough MPs to demand that. And what I'm asking people to do in MAMES is for you to go to your local MP and ask them to sign up to the aims of MAMES. And you can do that very easily. It's all on my website. The letter I want people to get their MPs to sign up to let us know, and we can build on that. We now have about 137 MPs adopted. We have 38 who have actually signed up, including Sir Vince Cable, good man. And when we get enough MPs who have signed up, then we will demand a public inquiry, and then we will have our day, as we should do, and change the whole management of chronic fatigue syndrome and ME in this country.
Excellent. There will be a full article out later in this week from me explaining MAMES, and also all the links will be in the show notes to that campaign. You hit on something really crucial there, which is your approach to ME/CFS, but it is also medicine more broadly, that you hit a brick wall with doctors, because it would change, they'd have to change their complete worldview and their thinking. And I mean, the sort of line I always use with it is, they have of course got mortgages to pay, unfortunately. But I have to say, what's been fascinating for me and Nicola during this period of time for us is that we've sort of taken your approach to several NHS doctors, and off the record, when they sort of release their shackles of the NHS, off the record they have said, yes, you are doing the correct thing. So I think there is a kind of willingness there, but it's whether doctors are willing to, as I said, risk their mortgages and their livelihoods for the sort of betterment of ultimately us as a species. Because this is the thing, Sarah, with MAMES, for me it's even even bigger than post-trial and ME. It is about exposing the flaws in corporate-led medicine for what they really are, and starting the ball rolling on a paradigm shift in the way we view medicine and our worldview more broadly. And I think it's absolutely crucial, and it could spark, as you say, a revolution starting from the patients in terms of how we do things. So it is extremely important. As I say, links will be in the show notes. What is also extremely important to finish this off is, as part of ME Awareness Week, the Academy of Nutritional Medicine, whose conference is on the 12th of May, Sunday, have kind of devoted a lot of the day of their conference to ME and CFS, and to giving voices to not only patients but doctors who are involved. And you are giving a fantastic presentation at the conference. Just tell my listeners what your presentation at the Academy of Nutritional Medicine conference is going to be about.
Well, essentially, I shall be telling that conference the most recent updates on how I'm proceeding, or how we're getting on with our judicial review. It may be that by Sunday week, I'll have a little bit more information I can tell them there. But I will ask them, A, to be aware of that, but B, people always want to know what they can do to make a difference. And I will say it again. I will say to them, please, you know, go and lobby your MP. Get them to sign up. We need the number of MPs in order to demand a public inquiry. And if you, Steve, can do articles on the Canary, that would be absolutely fantastic. If everybody can do their bit, then together, collectively, we can make a real difference.
Just finally, how do you do it? Because you're so impassioned all the time and enthusiastic, and as I say, you have overwhelming clarity on this. What keeps you going? Because I'm exhausted at the minute, and I'm not you. What drives you, Sarah, really?
What keeps me going is the pleasure of seeing people get well. I mean, my most important thing that I have, I think, is energy. And I'm so grateful that I have that energy, because I can do the things I want to do. But I live my life just as I ask my patients to do. I do all the things I ask my patients to do. I do the diet, I do the supplements, and I sort the thyroid nutrient. I do it just the same. I stay free from infections. And just getting the feedback from patients who tell me, you know, I'm back at work now. You know, I've now got the energy to have fun with my family. You know, I've been away on holiday and I haven't been able to do that for 10 years. That just gives you such a buzz. It makes all the difference in the world. I can send you some of the comments people have sent me. They're lovely. And that is what makes the difference. And that is why I left the NHS. I did 20 years in NHS practice. I left NHS practice because I didn't have the clinical freedoms to do the things that I thought were right. Now, financially, it was a disaster. I can tell you that. But thankfully, I paid for my house by then. My girls were independent. So it didn't matter if I went bust. But I now have the freedoms to do and say all these things, and that is so refreshing.
And it is so refreshing to have you on this podcast. Dr. Sarah Myhill, you are an absolute joy and a treat to speak to. It's always wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on this edition of the podcast. And as I say, there'll be plenty of links in the show notes to not only your work, but the MAMES campaign and the Academy of Nutritional Medicine as well. Sarah, thank you so much.
My pleasure. You're asking all the right questions, Steve. You carry on doing just that.
Thank you very much.